Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Riley.
Hey guys!
How goes it, senor?
So well.
And also with us...
No, it's actually pretty good.
Also with us tonight is Mr. Spencer Williams.
Yeah, what's up?
okay. We have got a great show in store for you tonight, as we're going to be talking about the sequel to 2014's smash hit kids film, The Lego Movie. That's right, we're talking about The Lego Movie Part 2, the whole title, the second part. Actually, it's what it's called, The Lego Movie 2, the second part.
Yeah.
Right? So stick around as we jump into that and talk about that. But before we do, Chad, give us a little bit of them opening credits.
Okie dokie, like an imaginative playscape constructed of colorful blocks, The Filmlosophers is assembled and brought to you each week by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. On that note, we're trying to build a bigger listener base. If you've been a fan of the show for a while, we'd love it if you invited someone else who loves movies to become a subscriber. As a perk, we'll let them listen in for free.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, new episodes of The Filmlosophers drop each Wednesday morning worldwide on a variety of streaming platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom. Spencer, boom, where else can people find us?
The human imagination is a powerful thing, but you shouldn't live inside your head all alone. If you're hungry for some interpersonal interaction, well, we can't really promise much unless you live where we live.
Yep.
But you can follow us.
And even then, there's a screening process.
It's true.
But you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. At least then you'll be part of the conversation. Everything is awesome on our website.
Hey, that it is.
We've got almost 150 episodes and a lot of additional content for your eager ears at filmlosophers.com. Seriously, even the negative reviews are really a lot of fun to listen to.
It's true. We get them all from all sides, but you know what? We have fun with what we do. And we are going to be having fun with talking about The Lego Movie 2, the second part. And I'm sorry, I'm laughing because of the fact that the song that you're listening to is actually in the movie, and it's made to be an earworm, and it is truly, honestly, an earworm.
It's stupid. It's so awful.
You've just got to embrace it, guys. Just dance.
Which Chad is doing. So, Chad, while you're dancing, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness of the movie?
If I can. It's been 5 years since everything was awesome, and the citizens are now facing a huge... new threat. Lego Duplo invaders from outer space, wrecking everything faster than it can be rebuilt. The battle to defeat the invaders and restore harmony to the Lego universe will take Emmett, Lucy, Batman, and their friends to faraway, unexplored worlds, including a strange galaxy where everything is a musical. Kind of like this song. It will test their courage, creativity, and master building skills and reveal just how special they really are.
Directed by Mike Mitchell, with Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who were writers and directors of the first film, returning as producers and writers. The film stars Chris Pratt, Elizabeth Banks, Will Arnett, Charlie Day, Allison Brie, Nick Offerman, and Will Ferrell, reprising their roles from the previous film, along with new additions to the cast, including Tiffany Haddish, Stephanie Beatrice, and Maya Rudolph. This film marks the fourth LEGO major motion picture to debut from Warner Animation Group after the 2014 first film, The LEGO Movie, as well as 2017's The LEGO Batman Movie and The LEGO Ninjago Movie. It feels like it's a club in here. Like, for real.
I mean, I'm not listening to you.
I know. The Lego Batman movie, obviously, and the Lego Ninjago movie came out the same year. Both great films. The film had an estimated budget of $100 million. And as of this week, as of February 11th, U.S. ticket sales aren't all doing that great. In all honesty, they're only at $36 million. only in the film industry can you say 36 million isn't that much.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that's a solid opening weekend in February.
Well, predicted, I'm sorry, for projection numbers, according to what Warner Brothers and them have put out. They're coming out with 36.2 million from this past weekend as of February 11th. So they're on a roll, and I'm pretty sure as they gain momentum, more and more people are going to go and see it. So
yeah, I mean, people had priorities this weekend. It was Grammy weekend.
That is very true.
I didn't watch the Grammys.
I was going to say. So, like
it's
we said,
be a fun show.
Like we said, we had a great time going and checking out this film. This was one of those movies that we put on the docket, not because of the fact that it was just, not for the simple fact that it was just being dropped that this particular weekend, but because of the fact that we actually enjoy the franchise. This is one of the rare opportunities across from, you know, aside from like crossover events and on TV or major crossover movie events like Avengers, Civil War, Infinity War, all these other films that cause a lot of characters to come together into one film. We actually really enjoy this franchise. I know for me, just personally speaking, one of my favorite films out of all these franchises was the Ninjago movie. But the Ninjago movie doesn't just have the ninjas from the Ninjago series. It also has other elements from other franchises for the Lego franchise. And that's what the first film did. The first film kind of transcended like all barriers. And you had things like Abraham Lincoln to Wonder Woman to Superman to Unikitty, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Unikitty.
Unikitty to all these different elements, all these different things. Dumbledore and Gandalf were in there. So having an opportunity to see all that, almost like your own play imagination come to life, it's super cool. And as like the kid and all of us, those are some of the things that we want to see kind of played out on the big screen. But due to studio rights and whatnot, you're not really able to see like Gandalf and Dumbledore standing side by side in a Roman Colosseum type room. That's just not really going to happen.
Yeah.
But in the Legoverse, it definitely happens. So knowing all that, we wanted to really see this film and give it a fair shake in terms of talking about it on the show because we like Legos and the film.
Well, and Lego's been doing some amazing things for about, 15 years almost probably now?
Yeah.
Between the video games and the TV specials and the made-for-TV or straight-to-DVD movies, let alone the feature films. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on with how Lego reinterprets other franchises and adds a touch of their own like pizzazz. Cause I mean, you've had, I know you've had Harry Potter, you've had the DC universe, the Marvel universe, Star Wars, Jurassic Park. Obviously everything that's in these movies, there's been a lot of, Lego versions of popular characters and whatever, and it's just got all this, it's just infused with fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like there's goofy stuff, and it's like, it's the kind of storytelling that winks at you while you're watching it. Like, we know this is goofy. We'll go ahead and wink at you and keep doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And I love that. I'm a sucker for that kind of storytelling.
What about you, Spence?
What about me?
Well, how do you feel about
Wow. I really caught your enthusiasm there.
I was going to say, everybody else was tracking. And I said, what about you, Spence? Huh? No, how do you feel about the Lego franchise? Because I know you're more of a gamer. Mm. Prior to being a part of this podcast, you're more of a gamer than you were a film watcher. And I'm assuming you've played several of the Lego iterations of video games.
Yeah, no, I actually remember when Lego Star Wars first came out.
Yeah,
I was just like walking in a store with a friend, and we're like, "Oh my gosh, they made a Lego version of Star Wars! How stupid is that? Let's play this dumb demo and see how it is." And then after 2 minutes, we're like, "Wait, is this actually good? Because it's like it is very goofy,
it's so
but it's like
fun.
Goofy in a self-aware way, and that kind of makes it like really engaging." So like, I was actually like, we actually bought it and played through that game, and I loved it. It was actually really good. So like, you know, Lego stuff, like, you know, it's not an automatic, oh, this is going to be terrible type thing. Because like, I can see how like you'd get that impression if you had like no contact with it at all. But like, it ends up not being like that. So, like, when the first Lego movie came out, like, I didn't see it, but not because it was, like, you know, Legos.
Oh, that's right. Side note, me and Spencer just saw the Lego movie.
Yeah.
What was it, Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw it Saturday, or he saw it Saturday. So, which was great. No, mm-hmm. It was Sunday because it was great because... It was still fresh for us to see it when we saw it yesterday.
Right.
So, continue.
Yeah. So, the reason I just didn't end up seeing it is because, like, everyone was singing Everything is Awesome at my workplace. And with no context, I'm like, I'm not putting up with this. Like, I don't know what it is, and I don't know if I agree with its message.
So was that just too much joy for you to handle? Is that what I'm hearing? Just too much positivity for the Spencemeister to withstand.
Hey, you know, not everything is awesome. Some things suck, and you gotta like fess up to that because you can't just
hide.
There's
some qualifiers in the song. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team.
There you go.
Everything is awesome when you're living a dream. If that's not the case, then it doesn't have to be awesome.
That's true.
Yeah, it also didn't help that I didn't hear the whole song. I only heard people be like, everything is awesome, and that's it.
That was a really pitch-perfect rendition of the song, Spencer.
Hmm. That was really good. We may have you do like the full version.
I'm impressed.
No, yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Very impressed.
Yeah, I'm going to start looking for like the karaoke version of that so we can have him sing it.
So anyway.
But it's, I think, one of the great things, though, even before like any of the visual formats, like TV, video games, movies, even before all of that, though, like, honestly, Legos were just one of those things where every kid who has ever had any kind of childhood and has had a love of just building things has had their own set of Legos. And I think we can all agree of that at this table, Spence included.
I didn't have Legos.
What did you have, Duplos?
No. I had Kinect.
You had Lincoln Logs?
Connects? Yeah.
Which isn't that...
It's not Legos, but like it's like a whole bunch of different shaped things.
The ones with like the gear sprockets and the sticks. And you stick them on. You've never had Legos at all?
No. But I've played with them, like just not at my own house.
Well, okay, then let me rephrase that.
I'll be honest. Most of my Legos came from McDonald's Happy Meals because Legos are expensive.
That is true. That is very true. Okay, so then let me rephrase that. Everybody has had in their childhood an experience with Legos.
Yes.
Or some building aspect. But the basic knowledge of having to work with Legos is pretty much wanting to build, wanting to create. And I think us as kids at the time, having that opportunity to do something with something as simple as plastic bricks interlocking together, it's great because it gives us that opportunity. I know for me, I had Legos. It was the same amount. It was like a small little bucket, but I would use it and turn just about anything into everything. And it was fun. And I remember, too, like how much it hurt when you stepped on them. But either way, which, by the way, it has been scientifically proven that stepping on a Lego with your bare foot is just about as bad as stepping on a hot coal or a piece of broken glass. So,
wow.
I'd like to see that study.
So, moving forward...
Way to call him on the carpet, Spence.
It's somewhere. But like I said, having that kind of experience and history with Lego, seeing it come to this way and seeing how even the basic premise of the first film of like, oh, there's a group of what's called Master Builders, which, mind you, is an actual moniker that they use for certain employees at the Lego company. Like Master Builders are actually a thing. But needless to say, having that type of character in the film and being able to see something like, oh, well, if you can see it, you can build it. Like, yeah, that was my whole thing growing up. Like, I would watch movies and be like, I want to build that car and then make like a dinosaur looking thing or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's your interpretation.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So coming back to this film, some of the things that I really was hoping for and talking about expectations. After seeing the first film and then re-seeing it with Spencer and kind of refreshing my view and memory of the film, one of the things that I wanted to make sure I saw with this next film, honestly, if you've seen the first film, you know, back in 2014, we're not spoiling anything, but you know how the twist comes about towards the end where you realize the Lego universe, so to speak, is actually the game or the... the session or whatever you want to call it that is happening within this child's head. And they are actually, he's actually playing it out in this big Lego structure that his dad has built in the basement and whatnot. And you understand that it's actually kind of a metaphor for the dynamic between his dad and him, and how his dad wants to make everything stick together, and how it parallels to the storyline that's happening in the cartoon.
Yeah.
And so you recognize that, and you're like, oh, that's really smart. That's really good. I mean, personally, that could have been like the next M. Night Shyamalan movie or something, because it was just, what a twist. Oh, so
terrible.
But it's one of those things where you didn't see coming, and you're like, oh, that's actually really smart. I was hoping to see that type of like cleverness and ingenuity in terms of story flow put into this film. Like, I wanted to see, like, okay, I know now this universe that they're playing in, this is the figment of a child's imagination. Great. I know that one already. You can't fool me again. I want to see what the next big transition is going to be, like what the next big like aha moment is going to be in the film. And I was hoping that it was still going to be in line with how much I was surprised and pleased with how the first one revealed itself, so to speak.
Well, but you can't re-reveal a reveal.
No,
you
know, but I mean,
can't put a genie back into the bottle.
Thank you, Christina Aguilera. But what I mean was,
though, you might want to if that genie is Will Smith.
Oh my gosh!
Are we gonna do this? Are we gonna do
Sorry,
this?
Sorry, that was that was my gosh, trail.
Because I kind of wanna.
I want to talk about it really fast.
That movie
later. We'll save it. Save it. We'll bring the genie back out of the bottle.
You opened the genie.
Back in the bottle. I know. I meant to, but didn't mean to, but I did.
Ivan Ooze is back. Okay, back to the movie.
Oh, mercy.
No, but in terms of this, like,
but no, you can't redo the reveal.
No, I mean, and I know
impossible.
That
it's
I definitely
done.
Know.
It is what it is,
and I know that. I'm saying though, like, whatever they're going to do in this film, I hope that there is something like another aha moment, like the aha moment when you realize when you see Emmett hit the floor and you see him look up and you're like, oh my gosh, this is actually just a play structure, and there's a little kid who's playing with Emmett, and that's the whole storyline. That kind of aha moment I was hoping to see follow in this film.
Like, the only way you could do that is if it turned out that the kid and his family were actually, like, part of the Sims video game.
Yeah.
Like,
you'd have to twist the twist.
That would be insane.
M. Night Shyamalan, I'm telling you.
Hey, all I'm saying is I really loved the photo in the little girl's room of the log ride.
Yeah, that was actually
that,
really
that was one of my favorite moments, because, like, oh my gosh. Can we see a movie with Will Ferrell and Maya Rudolph as the parents of these children, like, at an amusement park? That would be funny.
That would be funny.
Go to Legoland.
Take
yes.
Him to Legoland.
Yes. Yes. We got a sequel already.
That was my only expectation. That's what I was hoping for with this film. Obviously, not the same reveal. It's not what I'm talking about.
I think it is what you're talking about.
No, it's not what I'm talking about. I'm trying to say, like, something, whatever the big aha moment for this film, like how uh-huh. them revealing that everything was in the imagination of a child, like that big bright moment where you're like, oh, I see what they're doing. I wanted to see that kind of thing, which it kind of does happen in
what, the DeLorean wasn't enough for you?
No. No.
Spencer, were you awake for the DeLorean?
I was not, but I saw it afterwards.
There you go. So, yeah. So, we have a history
wow.
on this
That's
podcast.
Sad. That's your favorite.
We have a history on this podcast of individual filmlosophers falling asleep during films.
Hey, now, the struggle is real.
It really was.
So, thankfully, Chad said he was awake for this last
time. I did. Remarkably, I stayed awake this entire time.
And unfortunately, there's nobody to vouch for him because there's nobody that was with him to see it. So, true. But myself, Spence, and another friend did go see this film just the other day. And Spence sat in between us. And me and the other friend were actually playing ping pong with Spencer's body, nudging him back and forth, letting him know that he was starting to slump over and slightly snore.
Yeah, it was really bad. Like, you know, I've been tired through movies, but I've not done this where I just sat down and, like, almost instantly fall asleep. Like, me falling asleep says nothing to the movie. I was just so tired.
Okay, so the movie didn't bore you.
No. It was not like this.
And, you know what? I just, quick side note, I have to blame.
Did the pop music wake you up?
I think it did.
No,
because
you missed the first time. the first time they were playing some of the songs, you were totally oblivious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then never mind.
But it's, I think I have to blame it though on the new comfy chairs and the new like comfy system that they have. Like some reclining is okay, but when you have like full on straight bed looking type chairs that are heated in the seats.
These weren't heated though.
No, but I'm saying I'm pretty sure if we would have went to those heated seats,
oh,
at
it
would have
been over.
Game over, man.
2 hour
game
like,
over.
$7 nap. That's what it would have been.
So, in terms of my expectations,
there are worse ways to spend $7.
I know.
Just saying.
All right, I'm going to pass this torch over to Spencer. What were some of your expectations for the film? After seeing...
I was going to say, you just saw, like the day before, you saw the first one.
Right.
And then you're going to see the second one. Like, what did you think about the first one?
Oh, I liked the first one.
And you stayed awake for that one?
Yes, I stayed awake the whole time.
Okay.
Ed was right there. He did not have to nudge me.
I literally was not watching the movie the entire time. I was watching Spencer, and I just put the dagger eyes on him, just looking at you, buddy, watching you, watching.
Yeah, I think my favorite bit from the first one is the astronaut who near the end of the movie is just yelling spaceship. And
I have not seen Spencer laugh so hard in a while.
Because every time he's in the episode, he's just like, spaceship!
When Charlie Day finally gets to build that spaceship, and he's yelling at everybody's spaceship, Spencer could not hold his air. Like, he could not breathe for like a good 5 minutes.
It's starting again. I can see on his face.
Like, it was just like, spaceship! And Spencer would laugh and, spaceship! And
why? Okay. So that was like my favorite part of that first book.
That was when Charlie Day became a good person in Spencer's life after Pacific Rim Uprising.
We don't talk about that movie. Yes.
I don't know. Whatever.
No.
Something.
Oh yeah, no, it was Uprising. Anyway,
so now Charlie Day is back in Spencer's good graces.
So in the second movie, I was basically expecting like
spaceship.
I was actually expecting that to come back, yes. But, like, I was expecting, kind of a continuation. Like, I thought, I kind of thought, the story, how it goes. Like, the sister's coming in with all her stuff. But I didn't expect, a five-year time gap.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be more of, an immediate dealing of, you share your space with your sister. Blah, blah, blah. It was a bit different, and I also just I don't think they're gonna have another reveal like the first one, because that would be really, I couldn't even imagine what you would do, and I'm sure they themselves had a hard time of can we have something that big again, because it's a big one, it's a world changer.
Oh, it is, it definitely is, and hi, you guys. So I don't mean a literal re-reveal
You do.
Everybody forgot. Do. We're still in reality. Oh, no. I mean it's another big reveal. Like the way they were smart about the story writing for the first one and leading in the direction of revealing oh, by the way, boom, they're in the real world. Like something along the lines of that big.
Okay,
but the problem is you can't
even finish that sentence, because what would it even be? What could you do?
What they did in this film. They did it.
Yeah, the first time, but
in the second film.
Oy. Here's my thought.
Oh, that thing. Okay.
Yeah! Sheesh! Spaceship!
Here's my thinking. I just wanted to make sure.
Spencer just hit his mic.
Moving. That's usually what I do.
With your head?
With my headphones.
Okay.
Yeah, I usually do. Once per episode. Usually in the back half. Of the episode, anyway. I lost my train of thought. Going into this movie, I was hopeful. A lot of time has passed. And to be honest, I really enjoyed the Lego movie. Mm-hmm. I massively enjoyed the Lego Batman movie. The Lego Batman movie to me was already a step beyond what the Lego movie had done a couple years prior to that, or 3 or 4 years prior to that.
Yeah.
So now for me, I was the Lego movie 2 is not just can it match or exceed what happened in the Lego Movie 1, but like other things have happened since then. I haven't seen the Ninjago one, but I've heard that it was good. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed Lego Batman. So I needed it to be as good as or better than those. And we'll see in a few minutes if I thought that it reached that mark, but I really wanted to enjoy it because I love stupid, goofy humor like this. And I especially love, very similar to Into the Spider-Verse, mm-hmm. which these guys also co-wrote.
Yes.
Or one of them. I don't remember which one. I don't know that it was both of them.
I think it was just Phil Lord.
Anyway, lesson 142, you can hear what we thought about that. We all gave it glowing reviews. One of the things that I thought worked really well about it was that it had like its primary storyline, but then it had all of these small little touches all throughout, whether it was something hidden in a frame of the image in the background or whatever, or it was a little snatch of dialogue that floats from another character. And it's those little small, kind of, again, the little winky face moments.
Yeah.
And I had a standout character that we'll get to, but I had a standout character in Lego Movie 2 that is like the perfect, in my opinion, it is the perfect representation of the kind of little like extra gameplay that happens when you have fun aside from your A plot. In a movie like this.
So help me God, Chad, if it's the banana peel, I'm going to...
It's not. Okay. I couldn't stand the banana.
and
banana's there for the kids.
True. It is. And for Spencer, because every time the banana was on, Spencer was awake. So.
Yeah, but like it was dumb.
So jumping into the movie, obviously, the film, although it does say that it takes place, the majority of the plot does take place 5 years later. The initial start of the film does start at the end of the first Lego movie.
Yes.
Which is a good thing for Spencer and I because of the fact that we had just seen it so freshly on Sunday. And then coming into seeing it the next day on Monday at the theaters. It was kind of like that initial feeling of like seeing Rogue One and then seeing Episode 4 butted up against each other. Mm. So it kind of worked out like that. Like you see the end of Rogue One and you're like, I got to see Episode 4. And you see Episode 4 and it fits the tail end of that one. So the film does start at the end of the first film. And then it does talk about the invasion of the Duplos and everything that they do. And then it jumps forward 5 years. Which...
And it gets all broody.
It does. Like
super broody. I mean, it was in one of the trailers, too, but...
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
I mean, like, it's this dystopian...
Like, Mad
desert,
Max.
Dusty, like, ridiculously overdramatic broodiness.
Yeah.
Everybody's got tattoos.
And everybody's broody and totally...
Except for Emmett.
Except for Emmett. Emmett's the same, upbeat, positive guy. And the whole premise of the film is essentially... Lucy wants Emmett to kind of get with the times and change like everybody else has changed and everybody else is dark and brooding and being more like sorrowful because of the way the world is and the invasion of, you know, the Duplo planet or whatever. Duplon. I think they're whatever.
Duplon.
No, that's what they say. We're from the planet Duplon. And blah, blah, blah.
Oh, I could not understand that narration.
I was a teacher, so I understand.
I was going to say, I mean, it was a baby. I mean, it was, you could tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spencer.
I could tell. I just couldn't hear.
I thought it was a cute touch.
But you have, after all that, so pretty much Lucy wants him to grow up. They want to stop the invading army. Somebody comes to kind of meet with everybody and tell them that they need to bring people back to their planet and so forth. And so it turns into a rescue mission. Emmett has to go and save everybody.
Yeah. I mean, so you've got this obvious incursion of an alien force, which... You can tell by the way they're voiced, like it's the boy's younger sister, right? The boy who's controlling the Legos that we know.
Yeah.
His younger sister is trying to get in on the game and he doesn't want her to. And so they have a series of fights and over time, some of his disappear. And the way that the story tells it is that, you know, the Justice League got into a spaceship and flew off to go save them all and then never came back.
Yeah.
And
all except for Batman.
Every time something... In their world, the one that we know looks nice, mm-hmm. the aliens come back and destroy it and try to take it with them. So instead of looking nice, they've now built this alternative society, like grungy, dirty, dystopian, emo, whatever.
Yeah.
And so Emmett, Chris Pratt's character, lovable Emmett, he decides to build a house.
Yeah.
Beautiful yellow house, white picket fence. It's got all this cool stuff inside, including a waffle making room, like a toaster room for waffles. And immediately there's an alien spaceship that comes and chases them down and takes five of their leaders because they can't decide who the leader is. So it takes five of their alleged leaders back into outer space, past the, what is it, the space gate?
Sistar.
Well, to the Sistar system.
But the door that leads up. Yeah, the door gate.
Yeah. And so anyway, the main characters, everybody but Emmett, basically, is put into this little spaceship and taken away. So you've got Unikitty and Lucy and Batman and the astronaut guy.
Benny.
And the pirate, played by Nick Offerman. And they all get abducted and go off to the Sistar system, and they meet the queen of the Sistar system, which is Queen Watavranabi, because she changes shape all the time, which is newcomer Tiffany Haddish.
Yes.
She gets her own, like, song and dance number.
Watavranabi, yeah. Watavranabi.
And then in the meantime, Emmett goes on a separate adventure because he needs to go save his friends.
Yeah. So, and obviously you get everybody who you remember from the previous film. You get Chris Pratt, Elizabeth Banks. Chris Pratt is Emmett. Elizabeth Banks is Wildstar or Lucy. Will Arnett is Batman because Batman, there's kind of a mention, like there's kind of a notion that Batman was doing his own side thing, which kind of notes to like his movie that he did in 2017. So the Justice League go on without him. So that's why he's still there. You got Unikitty, who is voiced by Alison Brie. Nick Offerman, like Chad said. Benny, who's voiced by Charlie Day. You get everybody back. And then Tiffany Haddish, who plays the Queen. What's her name? I just want to hear Chad say it again.
Queen Watavranabi.
There you go.
That's really, as in, like, whatever I want to be.
Yes.
Right.
But Tiffany Haddish plays this character, and I think it's a good role for Tiffany Haddish. I mean, she's really good at it. There's this sense of, like, ambiguity in terms of who is right and who is wrong in this film, because you think you're watching, you're like, oh, well, of course, this is what's wrong. These people are the bad people. And then you're like, well, wait, they say they're not, but then that would be a totally, like, evil villain thing to say. And they're trying to do these things. And so it's kind of interesting how the dynamic switches back and forth and you're not sure. Emmett actually meets a person out in space while going through this asteroid field, so to speak. Someone named Rex Dangervest, which is also voiced by Chris Pratt. So you have two Chris Pratts in this movie. And
you've got like Parks and Rec Chris Pratt and like Jurassic World Star-Lord Chris Pratt.
That's actually a really great way to put it.
Yeah, it is.
Because there are so many mentions of this Rex Dangervest guy. Like, they say, like, oh, he's a galaxy-defending archaeologist, cowboy, and raptor trainer. And it's funny how, like, all those little nods are...
It's all Chris Pratt.
It is all Chris Pratt, like, galaxy-defending archaeologist.
So meta.
Yeah, super meta. And it's great to see that dynamic between like this softer the Emmett, the Chris Pratt that I remember from the first Lego film, and this newer like fast forward version of how Chris Pratt is and whatnot, and
like the action star.
Yeah. So you get this whole dynamic, and I have to say one of the things that I just really wanted to,
with a spaceship full of raptors controlling things, by the way.
That's right. That
I love those raptors so much.
And they talk, and they have subtitles,
and they all sound like the raptors from
they do
Jurassic Park. It's they do. Oh, this is perfect. One of the things that I really want to note, even before like getting to just the characters themselves, the choice to create the consistency in terms of time with these characters, like how they look after so much has happened, before you looked at the characters, you looked at their bodies, looked at all these things, and you're like, okay, they look brand new, they look nice, they look pristine. Now when you look at them, like, they look roughed up.
Yeah.
And it's all animation. It's not like there's no stop motion or anything. This is all through animation. Like, the paint's coming off of, like, Emmett's vests.
Yeah.
There are certain parts of, like, Lucy's paint and whatnot that's removed.
Several of them have fingerprints on them, including Queen Whatever Wanabi.
Yes.
Like, regularly you get, like, the sheen of the light hitting it, and you see fingerprints because they've been constructed by a hand.
Yeah. Charlie Day's, the spaceman, Benny, which his name is Benny.
Mm-hmm.
Benny's actually missing an arm, and he replaced it with another arm.
Yep.
And it makes it look like it was like a metallic arm or something. But all these things are really great to see. Even, and I have to say, one of the funnest things to see was, what was it, Apocalyptic Batman? The way he looked.
Oh,
at the
gosh, yeah.
With all these spikes and everything. It looks like something out of like Mad Max 2. I have to commend, like, the consistency, the choice to be consistent with how time would have passed and the use of play, even in the meta aspect of, like, these are being played by kids, and kids are going to rough them up and whatnot. They're going to throw them on the floor. They're going to get scuffed up. They're going to get chipped, even though it's, like, an apocalyptic world.
They do. In the real world, that's what happens.
Exactly. And I think it was spot on, like...
This is why we can't have nice things.
It's very true, Spence.
Mm.
So kudos to you know the design team who chose to go in that route, because
it was a smart choice,
and it was a very, like, it was one of those things where if you're not paying attention to it, you wouldn't have noticed it, and it wouldn't have been like an appreciation point. But for the fact that they went through that extra effort to, like, go to each particular character and meticulously, like, all right, he's gonna have some, you know, some of his paint removed here, or, oh, part of his hand is actually going to be bent more open than the other one, so he's not able to grip, or missing an arm, or the fingerprints. Like, doing that kind of thing, that's really intelligent, and it's really cool to show, like, that honor to the fan base, you know, for the people who love these movies. Also, in terms of, like, recognition, seeing Chris Pratt come back and reprise his role, I like Chris Pratt in this role. I like him in the film. But I think the standout person for this film, for me, was more of the Lucy character, Elizabeth Banks. Like, for me, that was one of the standout roles. Like, I think Elizabeth Banks doesn't get as much... We don't see her as much in film as of late. Like, I personally don't see her as much. So to see her kind of reprise this role and it not really seem like she's missing a beat from her first role in 2014 for this film... I really like just how the dynamic has shifted, even the way it kind of gets meta. They're like, wait, you're saying he's the special, but you did all the work? Well, he's a really great guy, and he did these things. Like, so you fought, and you did all these things, and you did this, and he's the one that's getting the credit for it? Like, that whole aspect of, like, where we are in the times and kind of making that mention.
Total social commentary, and it's intelligently done. Like, it's not, you know, you're not, it's very obvious, but at the same time it's not beating you over the head. It's not preaching at you, but it's being very blunt and straightforward about, like, oh, so wait a minute, you did all the work, and because he's a dude, he got all the credit.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought that was the fact that they went into it and didn't, like you said, didn't beat you over the head with it. They didn't play too much into that, but just mention it, because obviously I'm pretty sure there are people who had complained after the first film came out. They were like, oh, another one of those things where the girl's, you know, the one that's the super warrior, blah, 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 and the guy is the one who comes in and doesn't do anything, but he's the savior of the world, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get those are valid arguments. I didn't mean the blah, blah, blah if you're listening. But those are valid arguments. But the fact is that making mention of it, I mean, this is what they can do. Like, they can make mention of it. And, like, okay, we heard what you mentioned, but you were, you know, stating the obvious about the first film, and we're going to try to rectify it. And I think they do. They give Lucy a much more prominent role in this film, and they give her an opportunity to really stand out as a more leader figure rather than just, like, the secondary character from the first
film. Well, I mean, she's always kind of countercultural, right? Like,
yeah.
She's part of the fold in the first one, but she still marches to the beat of her own drummer, right?
Yeah.
And in this one, she's got more of the narrative voice. Like, she's the one that introduces you to, like, it's been 5 years, blah, blah, blah. She has this, like, dramatic monologue. Voice. And then she tries to teach Emmett how to brood like her, and he's like, war. And she's like, war, war, war. Like, it's really funny. I mean, it's really, really funny. And, but, like, again, she's the one, like, when they go off to the Sistar system, she's the one of all of them that doesn't convert.
Yeah.
She's not brainwashed, you know, indoctrinated and, converted. I mean, really, it's like this weird pop music conversion therapy thing that happens to all of them except for her.
Yeah.
And then she's trying to undo it from the inside. And then she ends up eventually meeting back up with Emmett and Rex Danger Vest.
Rex Danger Vest.
And still, she's the one with the levelest head.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an interesting twist with her by the end of the movie, which I thought was refreshing because I think a lot of times when you fashion yourself the contrarian who's a little bit above the entire dialogue that's going on around you, at some point you do deserve to be wrong about something. Because she makes several assumptions in this movie and she's not right about all of them.
Yeah.
She's right about some of them and it's good that she maintains her own independence.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I think it's an interesting commentary that especially for a child, because again, these are kids' toys and it's a kids' movie and it's, you know, the moralizing that is there is really meant for a young audience.
Yeah.
Unless you're an older person and just really childish, which some of us are. But
Spencer,
maintaining your independence and being your own person just to do you and just to be me, like eventually that there are situations where that philosophy doesn't hold a lot of water and you still need to be willing to change and integrate with other people. Trust them and, you know, value the whole more than just yourself as an independent part of the whole. So I think that it was a pretty interesting balance because she is, in many ways, the point of view character. I mean, yeah, you've got two different versions of Chris Pratt, you know, gallivanting around in this movie, but really Lucy is the point of view character and she's the perfect character because the entire conflict is a brother and a sister and Lucy is like the emo moody character that belongs quote unquote to the brother.
Yeah.
And yet the sister's way of thinking with all the glitter and the music and the everything is what's kind of taking over. And in a way where the first movie had sort of, you know, dad was this authoritarian, he was the business leader guy and the kid being a kid was like, but this is an imagination place. Like this is a playscape. Where's the play? And now you've got, well, the older brother is starting to get, you know, into his adolescence and he's moody and starting to be jaded about life and whatever. And here comes a little kid who's closer to that, you know, that playscape mentality.
Yeah.
And who's to say that she's wrong? So I thought it was a pretty, I don't know that I would say it's like mind-blowingly epic or anything like that, but it's pretty authentic. I think it feels authentically like an older brother and a younger sister fighting over the same toys, interpreted through the toys.
I agree. I think that's a really smart, you know, idea of like how the entire film is moves in the direction because it's true. I can probably count on every single finger and toe like many times over about like the times I've fought with my brother over toys and things like that. And it was very similar, like in terms of dynamic, like the way we fought and the way they fought as siblings. And it brought back a lot of memories. But I think moving with like the direction of them choosing to create the conflict between them two, as opposed of, cause there was no real like foe in the film. Like, you come to find out.
Sure there was.
Oh. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You're working to stave off Armageddon.
Wait, was it Armageddon?
Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was the prophecy that they were trying to avoid.
Which is really interesting because of the fact that...
Don't get into the twisty stuff. No. Let's be obvious. Armageddon was, as far as we know, that was the thing they were trying to stop.
Stop, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, that was that part of the reveal that I actually really liked. Like, the whole direction of how it transpired and moving thereafter, that event itself was part of that big aha, like, wow moment. Not that you didn't know, okay, our mom again, yes, there's a certain hint in that name that has to do with why, but how it transpires and how you see it happen and then the resolution there and after, like what happens after the fact, that was all a part of that like aha moment for me. Like, oh, okay, that's smart. All right. Because one of the interesting aspects of the film is the dynamic you come to find between Emmett and Rex. And Rex kind of takes him under his wing, so to speak, to show him how to be more grown up, more extreme, more with the times, I guess, so to speak, like how to be a master breaker. Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
A master breaker.
Instead of a master builder.
Which is, that's pretty unique in itself to that whole play. But like Rex tries to show him how to be able to destroy things so that way he can help resolve and fix things a lot quicker. What does he say? You have to break things before you can build them?
Something like that.
It's something along those lines.
I mean,
lines.
It's like, you know, you fly up and you do the power punch down into the ground and the whole ground explodes.
Yes.
Or, you know, you think about those YouTube videos that people did years ago with the giant ball of Legos rolling down the hill, yes, or whatever. And they just like completely disintegrate as they go. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So Master Breaker.
Master Breaker. And that becomes, that's part of like the many different plots that are happening throughout the film. You have obviously the situation between the queen and the captives that they have. And then you have the situation going on between Emmett and Rex and Rex teaching him these things. And then you're pretty aware that like there is a dynamic between the brother and the sister, because it kind of feeds you a little bit of the information, like, okay, well, this story has to do with them going through the quote unquote door gate and into the sister system, which is, you know,
the sister's room.
So it's really great in terms of the direction, how it goes from there. I really can say truly that Phil Lord and Christopher Miller's like fingerprints are all over this script in terms, yeah, of the story, because of the fact that it's very similar in that vein of the first film. I really liked how the consistency of like the storytelling and the way it's being revealed each step at a time, as like you honestly don't know who the villain is every time you see a scene. Like every scene that I saw, I always thought it was like, okay, it has to be this person. Well, no. Well, wait. Okay, yeah, it's definitely this person. Wait, something's up here. And then you come to find out who the real person that is not good in this film is. And it becomes that big, like, which includes the whole need of a DeLorean and the necessary parts of like having to come face to face with your past and your future and everything else in between. I don't know how much we're going to go into that.
I'm just waiting to tell you about my favorite character.
By all means. Actually, let's go ahead and talk about that. Okay. I want to know your favorite character.
So one of the things that makes movies interesting is when characters do actually face their worst nightmare and still come out the other side. Right, so okay, this whole movie, they're trying to avoid Armageddon. They fail. Armageddon happens. Maya Rudolph comes in, has to break up a fight between her children, steps, mm-hmm, on a couple different Legos, compares the pain to childbirth, and then says, it all has to go away. This is the last straw, right? Yeah. And so the kids have to put them away, all their Legos.
Yeah.
This was the spot where I fell in love with one of the side characters that is not even important to the story at all. And I've been laughing about this for days because I saw the movie before you guys did.
Yeah.
Earlier in this movie, in Apocalypseville or whatever it is that the boy has turned all of his Legos into, mm-hmm, the dystopian whatever.
That's like Apocalypseburg or something.
Apocalypseburg, that's, yeah, right. There's this very short side conversation where Emmett is... He's singing down the street with his coffee or lattes or whatever he's got, and he's saying hi to different characters. And one of the characters he says hello to is Surfer Dave. And Surfer Dave says, it's not Surfer Dave, it's Chainsaw Dave. Because he's like cutting up his surfboards and whatever with a chainsaw. He's got, you know, tattoos, whatever.
Yeah.
When Armageddon happens, Surfer Dave slash Chainsaw Dave shows up again and has my like killer favorite line of the entire movie, possibly any of the Lego movies that I've seen. Because I think it's Emmett. Somebody says, "Oh, hey, it's Chainsaw Dave." And he responds, "It's not Chainsaw Dave. It's Purgatory Dave." As he's falling into the bin. And Lord help me, I don't even really believe in purgatory. But that line alone, I wanted to roll out of my seat laughing. And I've thought about it like every 5 minutes since I saw this movie. Like, first, it's not Surfer Dave, it's Chainsaw Dave. And he's got a gruff voice, it's Chainsaw Dave. And then it's like, it's not Chainsaw Dave, it's Purgatory Dave. As he's being put into the box. How can you not love that? Brilliant. And that's what I love about, like, because you've got all the main story. You've got the main plot, the A plot, the B plot, probably a C plot or a D plot. Dave doesn't figure into any of the plots at all. He's just this recurring, like, question mark, like, character that has a name that keeps changing. But yet it's such a commentary on, like, changing and like surliness and whatever. Like, just, of course you're now Purgatory Dave. I mean, that's brilliant. That's so stinking funny. So anyway, that was my standout moment and my standout character of this story. And I apologize for anyone who listens to this episode and then goes to the movie expecting more than they're gonna get from that character, because I've just summarized every time you see him.
It's funny. I'm looking at the IMDb page, and it's listed as Surfer Dave slash Chainsaw Dave slash Purgatory Dave. Yeah.
Who voiced him?
Someone named Doug Nicholas.
It was just so funny. To me, it was so funny when he shows up again. The first one, you don't even, like, you notice, like, oh, it's not Surfer Dave, it's Chainsaw Dave. Okay, yeah. That's funny and cute. And then, like, I don't know, an hour and a half later, you see him again falling into a bin, and he's like, it's not Chainsaw Dave, it's Purgatory Dave.
Oh, anyway, my gosh.
I'm done.
No. Well, and another, like, so in terms of highlighting particular characters, one of my favorite points of the film where I actually laughed out loud were the scenes with where they kept running into Bruce Willis. So,
who wasn't voiced by Bruce Willis? He
was voiced by Bruce
Willis.
Really?
He didn't sound like himself.
Yeah, he totally had, like, the, yeah, it didn't really sound like him, but it's listed here on IMDb as him. But the fact that, like, he totally reenacts, like, the whole
Die Hard
thing is like, oh, hey, yeah, I just roam around in these vents. I just live up here, so excuse me. It's so great, and it comes up, like, there's a spot like maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes before that scene where they're talking about something and somebody says something to the effect of, oh yeah, right, Bruce Willis? And the camera pans and Bruce Willis is sitting in a hot tub and he's like, yeah, sure. And it's like, what? And that was, at that point, I was like, oh, it's not Bruce Willis. It's probably somebody else. And then they do the whole vent scene and it's like, oh, hey, yeah, I live in these vents. And he's got like this dirty shirt on and everything. And it was great. I think that was one of like the most fun moments for me. And I'm kicking myself because I was too busy like looking at all the little things falling into the bucket that I remember hearing someone say like, oh, it's Surfer Dave. But I don't remember what his response was. And now I'm kicking myself because I wish I could have heard it.
Well, now you got to go see it again.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, I think it's just indicative of one of the things that's so enjoyable about all these movies, all the Lego movies. And that is, you accomplish all the things that you need to accomplish to tell a unified story start to finish, right? It's got beginning, middle, end. It's got maybe a twist or two.
Yeah.
Like, it feels complete. And then within that complete matrix of a story, you still make room to have fun. Like, totally innocuous, unessential fun moments like Purgatory Dave or Bruce Willis or, like, the Raptors all have names and one of their names is the other one.
The other one.
Right? They all have names and then there's the other one. And literally when you see them several times, like, it's this one, this one, this one, this, and the other one. and name, and the other one. And then you see them in like the Sistar system.
Yes.
And there are only three of them, and the other one is like the second one that you see. So it's like, you actually know that that one is the other one. Like, it's got a specific color or something. There don't have to be seven of them for the last one to be the other one. Like, the second one in the lineup is the other one, and then the third one has a name again. Like, just small little touches like that, I thought, were really enjoyable. Because you don't have to do that. You don't have to put that level of goofy detail into it. But when you do, I think it indicates that you really have a passion for the way that you're telling the story. And mm-hmm. you went ahead and put in a little extra time to make it that much more fun.
Yeah. Which, so just to name them real quick, the Raptors' names were Cobra, Rocky, Ripley.
Oh, right. Yes.
And Connor. And the other one, which those are all names, obviously, if you're familiar with those are all names of like unique action movie star characters in film. So
from the 80s.
From the
80s. Specifically.
Yes. So, and that was like all those little things, they're just so
fun. All the mangy, like Apocalypse cats, they all had names and like clubs in their tails or something.
And then still from the continuation, talking about consistency, the continuation from the first film where she still has the one cat named Jeff. Mm-hmm. Like, Jeff. What about you, Spence? Was there any character or anything that you thought was, like, pretty cool and that you wanted to highlight from the film?
Oh, Bruce Willis.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah.
I took yours?
Yes.
You could have thrown something
stole
at me.
Stole his thunder.
That's what you get for taking blind spotting from me from that episode. We were talking about best movies from 2018.
Well, someone was holding a grudge I didn't realize.
Wow, that's been a few weeks.
That's true. Yeah. My gosh, I can't even talk. But I think one of the great things about this film is the care that goes into creating this story. Like, if you look at this story as a whole from beginning to end, it's a very complex and unique story. This is not just your simple kids movie where you go in, you have a situation, someone comes, they become the hero, they go and change things, and everything goes back to normal, and everybody has a happy ending. This is not one of those films. This film has, like, plot twist after plot twist after plot twist, where the main plot is not what you think it is, the secondary story is not what you think it is, and then even with the larger, like, meta story between the brother and sister, that's not even, you know, definitive in terms of how it seems like it's going to end. There's even a point in the film where the end sequence, so to speak, the words "the end" start appearing on screen, and you think it's the end of the film. And the characters,
so
like,
good.
It's like super meta. And they're like, wait, this can't be the end. And they totally stopped the ending from happening so that they could have resolution for the film. Like, we got to end on a better note. We got to have a happy note. And the film continues on because at that point, the movie seems pretty bleak, like, in all honesty. And
that would have been an amazing ending.
That would have been a horrible ending. Like, this bleakness? Is not Lord of the Rings. This is, no, this is, we are not going to end like this. There is no Boromir here. No. And that's smart. That's like one of those things where you look at it and you're like, all right, somebody put the work into creating this unique and consistent story that can follow the first film and do a great job at keeping up with how well and how unique and how engaged they can keep the story going. And even at sitting at what was the time on that film? Does anybody know?
Oh,
it was hour 46. So an hour 46 into the film, that's almost 2 hours. I mean, even at that amount of time for a kids movie, that's still pushing it in terms of keeping, like, engagement with the kids and attention span. But everything that's happening in this movie, it's like all focusing on keeping you engaged. Like all the colors, all the lights, all the funny songs. I mean, no joke, that song that we played earlier when we introed the movie review that we were talking about, that this song's going to get stuck in your head. That actually plays several times throughout the entire movie, and you do literally walk away from the theater still singing that song. And those are things, like, kids are going to, I have no doubt,
true.
Kids are going to be singing.
Also,
it.
One of the things this movie does, which I don't know how quickly you guys bounced out of the theater when it was the end credits, but the beginning of the end credits is a song about the end credits of a movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's so
fun.
Like, we're going to sing about the end credits. Like, and they name some of the people as the names are coming up on the screen as part of the lyrics of the song.
Yeah.
Again, that's a time investment that they did not have to make. That they went ahead and made. I think it's brilliant.
Well, and that final animation of, like, for the end credits of all,
yeah,
the,
really cool.
All the characters on this, like, large rotating, like, Lego structure and looking like they're handmade and they're being moved by, you know, some kind of engineering, mechanical, internal, whatever components. All that took a lot of time.
Yeah, it's
kind of
like a Rube Goldberg sort of drum that rolls that... cylinder drum that keeps spinning and there's a new scene and then you see like literally the fasteners and things that move the limbs and all of it.
Yeah. And I think that in itself as well goes into the care and effort that was put into this film. Honestly, I really had a great time with this movie. I really enjoyed it. I liked, you know, I liked them throwing another earworm out there. Like Spencer had mentioned prior, the, you know, what was that? Everything is Awesome song. Mm-hmm. That was the earworm of 2014. Everybody was singing it. It was on the radio. It literally
was on the radio too.
Oh yeah, they played it on the radio. There was other versions of that song too out there that have been played on the radio. Which, by the way, I hope we never, ever, ever hear that tween version of "Everything Is Awesome" that Emmett listens to at the beginning of the movie, because it was pretty bad. Yeah. It was like a Taylor Swift, early Taylor Swift version of that song. But I really have to say, this film did live up to what the first one had already done. Actually, what the whole franchise has already done with the Lego movie, the Lego Batman movie, the Lego Ninjago movie. It kept with the spirit of all of it, and I really did enjoy the fact that this film didn't, like, lose any of its momentum because it's a sequel, which can happen sometimes. We've seen that. So I really did enjoy the film. I really did enjoy all of what it, you know, came out to be. Were there any last thoughts from you guys in terms of the film? Anything to highlight? Any issues? Anything that you didn't like? Spencer?
I don't think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about you, Chad?
I think that one of the interesting things the film does, and I'm going to skate dangerously close to spoiler territory but not go there. I think one of the interesting things the film does is it gets... like extra meta, because some of the characters, we saw it with Emmett before in the first one, we see it with Lucy at one point in the Sistar system, in the sister's room, where they kind of have this almost like an out of body experience and they see the human world that is influencing their experience of reality. And there's a little bit in terms of the twistiness near the end of the movie. There's a little bit of like meta, like, wait a minute, was that instance created by one of the kids?
Yeah.
Or was it actually like a Lego figure living on its own?
Yeah.
It's kind of left a bit ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in terms of, you know, looking toward the future, there are all kinds of different possibilities that you could explore beyond... Eddie, to your point earlier, you know, okay, well, this was in the boy's head and now this is a brother and a sister fighting. Okay, well, where do you go next? Well, you might be able to make a case based on how the story works out in this one for the Legos sort of do have a life of their own.
Yeah.
There which might be would sentient. Be really trippy to explore.
Or something along the lines that Spencer kind of joked about earlier, but I think may have some credence in terms of this. Maybe the way everything is playing out is actually being played out in the mind of, like, Will Ferrell, whom you really don't see him much in this film. You hear him quite a bit. Not really spoiler alert, but you hear his voice. You don't see him show up in the film, but you do hear him somewhere in the house. But, I mean, maybe there's some kind of even, like, meta version of that where, like, all the situation, like, the dad is... completely removed from the situation. Maybe he's somewhere off thinking about how this whole thing could play out.
He's off playing golf.
He's off playing golf.
You kind of see that in a way. His cipher, his Lego figure, goes off and plays golf while this whole mess is going on. And he comes back at the end.
That's true. But let's go ahead and round this thing out and talk about how the film passes or fails and how many monocles. And I want to go ahead and start with Spencer, seeing as you were the one who saw the film, the first film recently, and then you saw the second film. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Yeah, this film passes. It's it does really well for a sequel. You know, it keeps things going. It doesn't, like, trip up in itself and, like, you know, try to, like, you know, top the first one and then fail miserably. It's actually really entertaining, despite the fact that I fell asleep.
That's true. You did fall asleep.
Yes, and you'll be happy to know that, like, even if you do fall asleep accidentally, you can still track with this movie pretty well. Because they do a really good job of, like, re-explaining things they've already talked about.
I do have a clarifying question.
Yeah.
How many times did you fall asleep?
Oh, boy.
I cannot tell you.
Oh, boy.
Because I do not know. It
now,
was a lot.
When I said we played ping pong with Spencer, it was probably, like, every 15 minutes it was a nudge.
Because I know my highest frequency so far was Blade Runner 2049,
yeah.
And I fell asleep twice distinctly. I mean, I nodded off maybe one other time, but I woke myself up. But you, Eddie, had to wake me up twice.
True. From, like, dead asleep.
So I've got to give you props. If you were asleep more than two times in this movie,
yeah,
like, my hat's off to you.
And here's the interesting thing about Spencer. Spencer has a very unique focus face. And you look at Spencer, and when Spencer is looking at something, his, like, all the muscles in his face relax. And I know he's looking at something and he's focusing on it, but it's hard to tell the difference between that and his sleepy face. And so there were times where I looked at him and he was having, it looked like his focus face on, and then I would see his lip move. And I would hear it, like, he would snore. And I'm like, oh, he's asleep. And I'd push him over. So it was about, like, every 20 minutes, every 20, 25 minutes throughout the film. So at least three times. I'll give him that. At least three. More than you fell asleep for Blade Runner 2049.
You beat my record.
Yeah, because I missed, like, the introduction.
In a far more animated setting, which is
it's
incredible.
Very true.
Yeah, I missed, like, the introduction of the Queen and...
Oh. Yeah.
Like,
she has a whole song and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Nope, missed all that.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
And then I missed Armageddon exactly. So
you missed,
like,
Purgatory Dave?
Yeah, No, I saw, like, them being sucked up, but, like, all of a sudden Maya Rudolph was in the movie. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then I think I fell asleep during that, like, final twist.
Spencer, people are going to be listening, like, what leg do you have to stand on to review this movie?
Well, what were you actually awake for?
Hey, like...
the previews.
Like, even...
hey, that is a solid half hour that
that's
you have to
where
through.
I lost all my momentum through those previews. It was 30 minutes. Like, if you flip that around...
That's brutal.
I would have been fine. Ish.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I would give this movie, like, 3.5 stars.
All right.
Nice. Chet. Let's see. I don't think at the end of the film, I don't think I enjoyed it start to finish as much as Lego Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I think it definitely matched how much I enjoyed the Lego movie, the first Lego movie. And it did some new things, some different things, some of which are expected because it's not trying to be, like, avant-garde,
yeah,
like, mind trip awesome, right? But some of it was unexpected, especially the meta. Like, wait a minute, do some of these Legos have lives of their own?
Yeah.
Like, truly? Lives of their own? And, I mean, Purgatory Dave. Purgatory Dave, to me, is the new Left Shark. I have been obsessed with Left Shark for years now.
That's true.
And Purgatory Dave is going to be up there. So I'll pass the movie, and I will also give it 3.5. Probably a whole monocle is Purgatory Dave.
There you go.
His transformation from Chainsaw Dave to Purgatory Dave gave a whole extra monocle to this movie.
I'm going to pass this film. This film was definitely fun to watch. I did have a good time, and I did actually stay engaged throughout the whole film in terms of, like, this being a kid's movie and staying focused. I didn't have to shush anybody in this film.
You threatened it.
Although I did threaten it.
I remember that. I was awake for that.
There was a kid who was crying or making noise off in the corner, and I turned to Spencer and said, I will hush a child.
So ridiculous.
Spencer said, hey, you got to do what you got to do.
So, I did not. No.
Spencer.
So the film passes for me. In terms of Monocles, I'm going to also give it a 3.5 out of 5. I enjoyed it. I do have to say I did enjoy the first film a little bit more than this one. This one still holds up in terms of the consistency of the story, and I still had a great time with it nevertheless. So, all in all, 3.5 out of 5. Great movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But that about wraps up another awesome review of The Lego Movie 2 and an episode of The Filmlosophers. Again, you can check us all out on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101.
Oh, wait.
Oh, whoa.
Wow. Sorry. Sorry.
I woke up like a shot.
I just remembered we should talk about something else before we end the episode. We should go back and talk about that Aladdin trailer.
Well.
Oh, that's true.
Because it's going to be real quick. It doesn't make sense to like put it on its own thing because.
Here's the thing about this trailer. I think somebody on Twitter put it best. This looks like an under-budgeted Bollywood film. I wouldn't see this.
Oh, God.
I am not looking forward to this film at all, and I really hope that this last film is just a very rough cut or very rough cut scenes from the film, because Will Smith looks like after Fresh Prince, he did nothing and just went into obscurity. This is what his character looks like in this film.
No, did anyone see this and like look at it and be like, I feel like I'm looking at lag in real time somehow. Like, I don't know. It was just like my brain had a hard time like dealing with this imagery.
Yeah.
Plus, it looked bad.
It did look bad.
Now, wait. What specifically looked bad? Like the whole thing?
Like Will Smith specifically?
Yes.
But like as it stands now, I'm not really feeling like their Aladdin choice or their Jafar choice.
The Jafar choice has totally the wrong voice.
Oh,
and
completely.
I know you can't replicate it.
Yeah,
I mean, Jafar is Jafar. There's
hard.
No, you're not going to get that back.
I'm still reeling from Spencer's. Oh, so
sorry.
Just give me a second. My ears are
but
still
like, there's a lot that really, like, when they don't talk and the visuals are really like the cartoon come to life.
Yeah.
Those parts are pretty cool. When you hear them talk, it's a little rough. And then, oh, word.
Well,
the ending with the genie. Please
give us back the regular colored.
Like, literally stick the cartoon Robin Williams genie in with the live action characters, and it'll be better.
I will totally do a Roger Rabbit thing with this one and just put the cartoon of Robin Williams genie in this movie.
Totally.
Here's the problem that I have. And this was one of the things that I was having issues with the Jungle Book remake and. What else? I don't think there's been any other. Well, some of the Peter Pan live action remakes too as well. My problem is this: I don't want to see a shot for shot recreation of the cartoon.
Oh, you mean like Beauty and the Beast was?
Oh, that's the other horrible one. Yes,
that was
that was god awful.
Gosh,
like I don't want to see shot for shot recreations of the cartoon. If I wanted to see the cartoon, I'll just see the cartoon. The cartoon's good in itself. I don't need to come and see a live action reproduction of everything that I already have and I own here at home.
Yeah.
There's no reason to waste money on that.
I'll just wait for Kimba.
That's another one that I don't get what the whole focus is of trying to recreate what has already been perfected.
I'll tell you who's not going to screw that up.
Who that?
Tim Burton.
With Dumbo?
With Dumbo. He's not going to do a shot for shot of Dumbo.
Well, that's because he's going to give us more nightmares.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't need that. I wasn't a big fan of Dumbo to begin with.
I already have nightmares from that hallucination scene. I don't need Tim Burton messing with that. I don't need him adding to that disillusion that I have that I'm okay. But this film just looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not even a matter of like, okay, the people that are in it, you're not too sure who they are. You're not too familiar with them. Like, you have to go and research who these people are, the performers in the film. And that's fine. If they want to go in that direction, you know, by all means. But you're putting Will Smith in a very precarious, you know, position. Number one, he is portraying a character that we have come to know and love for years. Almost, what, 28 years?
Yeah, a long time.
It's been a while. And you even have great performances from the Broadway version, The Broadway version of the genie has done incredible things. He's his own unique character and his own interpretation of...
Because nobody's going to be able to do...
Nobody can Robin Williams like Robin
right.
Williams.
Yeah,
like,
no.
There's no chance.
No. And you have Will Smith coming into this. Here's the thing. I was not opposed incredibly to when they posted that picture, that promo photo
of
the three of them. And it was Will Smith looking like Will Smith, and he had like a little top knot or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't, there was a lot of people that were upset. I was not too happy, but I'm like, you know, whatever. Now, after seeing this trailer, I would totally go back to that promo photo. I'm like, just give us Will Smith. You don't need all the CG. You don't need Will Smith to look like the, you know, the Stay Puff Man. Like, he doesn't need to be bulked up or look like it's not him, because it definitely is not his body. And it totally looks disproportionate to his head. I don't know if they were focused on, like, because Will Smith has a skinny head and it's a big, bulky body.
The problem is that they're doing everything else is like photo real, right? Because in the cartoon, that is kind of the way the genie is proportioned. But it's because it's a cartoon.
You can do so much with a cartoon that you can't do in reality.
Correct.
Like, people, like the Dr. Seuss things where, like, people don't have noses. It's terrifying when you have something in your life without noses.
Yeah, Michael Myers is the cat, or Mike Myers, not Michael Myers. Mike Myers is the cat.
I was like, hold up.
Just pass, hard pass, terrible.
Will Smith, and these are a couple of things from Twitter. Will Smith as the genie looks like what one of those kids from the 90s Fruit Gushers commercials would look like if they never found a cure for their fruit curse.
Yes.
Will Smith as Aladdin's genie makes me want to uninvent CGI. Why does Will Smith look like a Smurf centaur? What kind of genie? So, needless to say, there is a lot of outrage, and there's a lot of people who are really not liking it. Myself and the rest of the people here included, I don't know what the idea was going forward with this particular character design, but with as many people as there are opposing it, I really hope that this kind of opens the eye to whomever is heading this film and helps them see that they need to retool that genie. Like, they need to do something else. Just plain and simple. They just need to do something else, because if they continue to release it as it is, it should just go straight to, like, TV. Like, not even go to home, you know, on DVD or go to, you know, I wouldn't even put this on VHS.
Do you know what this belongs in? You remember when, like, Disney used to have, like, that Sunday night movie or whatever it was, or Saturday night, and it was always something that was kind of awful? Perfect. Right here.
There you go.
Which is a shame, because Aladdin was, like, my favorite cartoon movie growing up. I liked Aladdin more than The Lion King.
Oh, completely. I'm in the same boat. I love the Aladdin. I think it's a great movie, and I think there's a lot to it that made it so great because of Robin Williams
and what
he brought to that role. It's incredible. Like, I have a diamond edition or whatever it is of Aladdin over on my shelf, and one of the great things about it is it goes into detail about the recording sessions with Robin Williams and how Robin Williams gave him so much stuff, so much content to work with, that they had to leave hours and hours of audio on the editing room floor because they couldn't animate all of it. It was just there, and they're like, we can't put all this all into the movie. But the fact is that Robin Williams gave him a ton of stuff to work with, and that's why it made it so great, because of him and his, you know, humor and his spirit that, you know, animated the entire film. So
yeah,
I should try to see if they could have clipped together enough of the leftovers to make something work for this movie.
I would be
do
totally
a completely
on board for
CGI genie, because this is just terrifying.
I don't even want to see what you're looking at.
Have you seen the mashup of the genie, Will Smith's blue genie face on the human leg Sonic body?
Oh my gosh. Please, no.
It's double terrifying.
Please,
it's so
no.
Terrible. Sorry, we digress.
Either way, this does not look good. It's almost insulting to the original source material, and I really hope that whoever is heading up whatever is going on over at Disney hears our cries and finally decides, you know what, maybe we should listen to them and not do it like everybody else says. What is it? What is it?
He's looking at the mashup.
I don't even want to see.
Sonic Genie.
I'll show you later.
So before we let you go, we want to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. You got Isn't It Romantic, Happy Death Day to You, and Alita Battle Angel. So if you get a chance, you got this week, you got Valentine's Day. So go ahead and go out there, take somebody you care about, or have your own Valentine's Day and have a great time. So from all of us, before we lose this entire show off the rails
already,
let's go ahead and close this out with from all of us here at the Filmosophers. I'm Eddie.
Yo,
spaceship. Class dismissed.